Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters Show with your host, Joel Zaslavsky. Crank up that imagination, let yourself feel silly, and enjoy the trip you're about to take. This is episode number 62. Yo, it's so good to have your ears and attention on Smart and Simple Matters. This show is your show, and I am grateful when we get to experience it together. I hope you're feeling grateful too, especially if you live in the United States and just experienced Thanksgiving 2014. Now, of course, I got my Thanksgiving on, but really, it was every day is like Thanksgiving to me. And if you want a daily dose of gratitude and contentment, and not something that's going to wear off based on the calendar, I suggest reading an article I wrote earlier this year titled How to Make Thanksgiving Today or Whenever You Want. I'll have a link to it in the show notes for this episode at valueofsimple.com/SASM062. But now that it's December, I'm gearing up for... not Christmas. Not Hanukkah. Not even the new year. You want to know what it is? It's birthday month. Well, it's birthday month, at least for me, because my wife Melinda's birthday is this month. But before that, my mom, dad, and brother all have birthdays within a week of each other. Kind of nutty, huh? I'm the only one in the immediate family with a birthday outside of that week, back in September. But maybe you have a birthday this month? If so, get in on the party, baby. Let's celebrate together. But I suppose we should get on with the show. My guests for this episode are friends, simple living enthusiasts, an authentic and clever parenting team, and hey, they just generally make people smile. It's amazing how quickly a relationship can grow, and my friendship with Chris and Sarah Wakecamp is a great example of that. Chris caught wind of me first from, I believe, Dan and Vanessa Hayes' Simple Life Together podcast, and Sarah heard about me in July from an interview I did with John Lee Dumas of Entrepreneur on Fire. I'm actually going to link to Sarah's comment on my Simple Rev vision post back in November 2013, because that's when I said to myself, yeah, these two are my kind of people. And now, through the continued power of podcasting, I have the pleasure of featuring Sarah and Chris on today's episode. Even if you're not a parent of young ones, or heck, even if you're not a parent at all, there are some great lessons for everyone in this episode. Here's a taste of what we covered, but don't miss the end where we all can enjoy a special guest appearance from a funny little fella, and it's not even my dude. First, we explored the invisible gifts that this couple brought back from Europe and South America and gave to their boys. Then, they describe how you don't need the forced simplicity from having identical twins to slow down and live intentionally. Sarah explained how she avoids the mommy Pinterest competition. Chris talked about how to free kids to have more and better quality free time. Then we finished strong with how to get out of the way and let your kids have fun the way they want to have fun. I'm ready to give a big Texas howdy to these two. How about you? Here we go. Chris and Sarah Wakecamp are the husband and wife co-founders of Parents Who, a company on a mission to enhance the quality time of families like their own. Ever since they became parents to their identical twin boys about 4 years ago, their priorities have shifted dramatically. Bigger house, better cars, more stuff? What's the point when all they really want is more stress-free time together as a family and more freedom to pursue the passions in their lives? They launched ParentsWho.com in June 2014 and just went live with their first product called Imagining Aloud. It's a series of all original children's audio stories which are fun for parents and kids alike, and they are an amazing screen-free, stuff-free way to spend quality time as a family. Little programming side note, Imagining Aloud comes with the Grant Zeslowski seal of approval. And that's a tough one to get. Welcome to the show, you two, from Grant's Papa, also known as me.
Hey, Joel. Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much, Joel.
Yeah, it's cool to have you on. Let's start. What do you think? Should we start where we normally start, with a little Seeds of Awesomeness action?
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, you two decide who goes first in terms of something about your youth, your childhood. Maybe it was the environment in which you grew up. Maybe it was a specific experience. But let the folks who are listening right now understand a little bit better of where you came from so we can understand why you are who you are today. Who wants to take that one?
I'll start out. I grew up a very interesting, lonely, only child and with a lot of fun stories that I would make up all the time. And it wasn't always so fun for my teachers in my classes, the way that I would try to be the class clown and get attention all the time. There was one teacher who was able to kind of harness that and gave me a book and said, I want you to go home and I want you to read this book into a tape recorder. And then I want you to bring it into class and we're going to listen to you read this book to our class a chapter a day. And it was probably sixth or seventh grade. And in a lot of ways, it changed my life because it made me feel like these things that teachers had always sent me to the principal's office for were actually valuable to somebody. And so I went home and dutifully recorded the entire book, Hank the Cow Dog, and brought it to school that next week. And over the next week, the entire class sat and listened to my voice in rapt attention, which they would do a lot anyway because I was, you know, making fun of the teacher and cutting up. But in this case, it was in service of what was already happening in the classroom. And that kind of just stayed in the back of my head for a long, long time. And so it's led me here to the point where I'm creating these original children's audio stories.
Yeah, educationally sanctioned silliness. That's pretty cool that you had the opportunity to do that.
Sarah, I always owe a debt to Miss McConnell.
Miss McConnell. All right. If we can somehow put her in the show notes, we will. Sarah, I would imagine your story is a little bit different than Chris's. Can you give us a flavor of your Seeds of Awesomeness?
Yeah, my story is a lot different. I was a very straight-A, very quiet student. I would never get called out in class for any of that. But I actually began traveling when I was very, very young. I had grandparents that lived abroad, and my parents encouraged in us very young to travel and visit and experience new places. So when I graduated from college, I went and moved to Spain to teach English. And when I lived there, I tutored students in their homes, elementary school students mostly. And I got a sense and a feel for how different family life looks in Spain at that particular moment, because that's where I was, versus what I had seen in the United States. And what I saw was families living in, you know, very small apartments with just bare bones, minimal stuff, that they would go outside after dinner, after eating dinner together in the evening, and play outside and be with their community, be with their families. It was very, very educational and very interesting to see the interaction between the families and their neighbors and the kids with each other, and to see how all that was possible without having cars and giant houses and lots of toys, and that the focus was more on the values and spending time together and coming home from work, you know, at a reasonable hour and not making long commutes. And I kind of saw that this kind of life was possible, and not only possible, but something that I definitely wanted to have when and if someday I had a family of my own. So that's just something I noticed whenever I travel to various places, is how family life is there and what aspects of it I find to be valuable that could be brought back to home, which is right now Plano, Texas, and incorporated here. And so I just seek out those opportunities still to this day, because it's interesting to see how people do things differently all around the world, and to try to incorporate that into our own family life.
Yeah, I know Chris has caught the travel bug from you. But going back to your days in Spain, growing up in Texas and experiencing that certain culture and then going somewhere else and having it not be fundamentally different, but things are, in terms of, like you're saying, the way that people engage each other and the amount of time that they spend outside and the what constitutes a need versus a want versus a desire. Going back after you experienced that, did you struggle reintegrating into American life, or was it just a world of possibilities and you were just focused on what's the next thing? When do I get a new opportunity to see how other people live and how I might be able to live myself differently?
I definitely struggled when I came back because I was definitely in the minority of the people that I knew at the time. Not many of my friends had lived abroad for years at a time. And so it was hard to find anyone that would understand that, you know, I didn't want to buy a car and I didn't have a cell phone, and actually didn't have a cell phone for quite a few years after moving back. So it was definitely a challenge of trying to figure out how to bring the things I had learned in Spain and incorporate them back in the culture that I was re-immersing myself into. But it was a challenge that I took on, and I have found, you know, resources and tricks and tips along the way of how to make that marriage between simplicity and family time and being true to what I really do value versus being in a culture that, you know, is oftentimes consumed with consuming. It's a daily battle still to this day.
Mm-hmm. Chris, it sounds like you had a similar experience, although a little bit later. My understanding, just from reading a little bit on your background, you two traveled to Europe together. And was that an eye-opener? Did you discover just how differently that you could experience the world and think about your relationship to people and items?
Yeah, that's a good summary. We spent some time teaching abroad in Turkey, in Ankara, Turkey. And then we kind of leapfrogged off of that opportunity and were able to travel around Europe for one summer. And that was the first time I'd been exposed to these different ways of living. And it was a little bit later in my life than Sarah, but I was still very much open to these new ways of doing things, especially when it comes to, like Sarah was saying, family life. And, you know, family life was something that we knew was still a few years away for us, but it was something that we had already started thinking about and talking about. And getting exposed to, you know, 8 people who all live in a 2-bedroom apartment, and that's a way of life that isn't necessarily a burden to them. People who are in, you know, urban areas that are very confined in their space, very confined in their possessions, very confined in their modes of transportation, but perfectly happy, and in some ways much, much happier than some of the people and some of the culture that I was leaving behind. So there's definitely some value in that. I wish I could have come to it a little bit sooner in my life, but I'm glad I came to it at all.
That's all right. I tell people all the time who have listened to Smart and Simple Matters or paid attention to Value Simple about my personal renaissance, and that started at age 30. Could have started at age 60, maybe could have started at age 20. Who knows? I'm just grateful that it started at some point and that I'm on a new journey, and it's a much more fulfilling journey. And it sounds like you two had some individual points. But now, as a husband and wife and with 2 little dudes, you're on a collective journey. So when you talk about being parents, I know that's just a fundamental lens in which you view yourselves and your role in the world, but also within the lens of simplifying, whether it's your family life or just in general, you know, you two know I love asking this question, but can you both, Sarah, I'll start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about what simple living means to you?
I say this sounds counterintuitive, but we actually got really lucky in having twins because it was basically forced simplicity, because we knew that we didn't want to have a lot of stuff. And I think if we'd had one child at a time, that is, I think we would have had the opportunity to have a lot more stuff for that one child: swings and, you know, bathtubs and car seats and whatnot, all the stuff that, you know, babies, they come with a lot of stuff and it can be really big. The fact that we had 2 at the same time and we have a smaller house forced us to make some very early decisions about how much stuff we were going to have and what was actually necessary. So
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because I have two boys like you, although they're 3 years apart. And one of the things that I like about having them 3 years apart, and I know it's the same thing for my parents. I was the younger brother. I had an older brother who's 2 years older, and there was always hand-me-down clothing and toys, which meant that my parents could have less stuff because they knew that whatever it was that they would get would be used twice. Whereas with your dudes, as far as I know, they can't both, they probably try to get into the same t-shirt at the same time, but they probably can't actually do it. So that's counterintuitive to me. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, well, so when we, so we have the boys, and they're the first grandchildren on my side of the family and on Chris's side of the family. So both grandparents were extremely excited when they found out that they were going to be grandparents. And we had to start the message early that they don't need each their own easel, and they don't need each their own little, you know, those little walkers they had, you know, with, you can learn to walk in them, you kind of sit in them, and
it's like a thing you push.
We just need one of those, and we just need we don't even need isn't the right word, but a lot of the different materials and things that I think that you would have if you had one kid, we tried to just say, let's pretend like this is one kid, because our house can't fit all this stuff, and what of this do we actually really need? Where I think is, if it was just one kid, we wouldn't have thought through, what do you actually really need? It would just be, this all sounds great and it'll all fit, so bring it all on, and then we'll just figure it out later. It'll end up in a trash heap somewhere, or, you know, recycle.
Or the secondhand store.
Yeah, or the secondhand store.
Yeah.
But we had to be a lot more intentional about what we were going to buy two of. And what we would just tell people, look, we don't need two of those. We just need one. And had to actually think it through, because we didn't want to buy a bigger house, and we didn't want to buy bigger, you know, two bigger cars. And we didn't want to start. I was working at the time as a teacher, but had planned to be a stay-at-home mom. And we didn't want me to have to keep working. I wanted to be able to stay at home with the boys. And to buy more of this stuff, to buy two of everything, I would have probably had to have kept working. So we just made the decision early on that we were going to keep this as simple as was possible and focus more on being with the boys, loving them, giving them attention, having time with the grandparents, versus having a lot of toys and a lot of stuff and a lot of clothes. And
even beyond the possessions, I feel like we also had to simplify in terms of some of the other pitfalls that, you know, people that were friends of ours at the time were complaining about. For example, I had a friend who was, you know, telling me about how difficult it was because every night their kid was, you know, coming into their bed and sleeping with them. And not only was that difficult because it was kind of cutting into his time with his wife, but, you know, it was also difficult to sleep in the bed with a little kid who's, you know, rolling around and doing stuff that little kids do. Well, it was just never really an option for us to put both of our boys in the bed with us. It was just never, there was no feasible way to do it. So it wasn't, there was no way for us to kind of get caught in some of the things that I think some of the other people got caught in, even beyond consumption things, but also just parenting things, that we had a lot firmer boundaries with certain aspects simply because it wasn't one child. Mm-hmm. Whereas if it had been just one child, maybe we would have said, oh, it's okay, you know, for tonight, you know, you can stay with us. And then that turns into the next night and then the next night. And I think that's kind of how it happens.
Right.
Yeah, there would be four in the bed and the little one would say, roll over.
Roll over.
You both would be rolling out. Now, an alternative to that would be, and maybe for people who are thinking about it, even if they just have one at a time, you could just get a twin bed and stay in that. So even if you have one kid, there's no possible place for that kid to go. Is that a potential solution?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
There are probably better solutions. I'm sure we'll think of that at some point in time. All right. So you're on this very intentional journey, and I know that you two both have plans. We were talking even before the show started about your planned trip in the coming month to Costa Rica for a week. You're taking the boys with you, which sounds awesome. What a great experience to give them. I know, Sarah, you were given the gift of travel at an early age, and you're repaying that to the next generation with your boys. So I think that's really cool. What one thing I want to make sure that we hit on, of course, we're talking about parenting, and as parents, you know, there's a lot, because I get comments on this all the time. We talk about kids, even for parents who are older and they're not actively parenting young kids, they really enjoy hearing about the process and why people are doing the things that they're doing for their kids. I want to shift just a little bit to this thing that's called imagining aloud. Before I ask you, maybe you can just tell in your own words, Sarah, perhaps you can take this one. What is imagining aloud?
Well, imagining aloud is something that we are very excited about and just launched this last week, actually. It's a series of all original children's audio stories. They are all written and recorded and produced by Chris. And they are stories that you can subscribe to, and you get two new stories in your account each Friday. And they are available for you to listen to with your children. You can listen from the computer or a tablet or your phone, or burn them to a CD and listen to them in the car. They're a great screen-free, ad-free way to have family time when, for example, you may come home at the end of the day and you're just completely exhausted and both parents are just ready to kind of just collapse, and the kids, you know, want to do something with you. And sometimes we've, you know, taken the boys and gone and laid on the couch or snuggled up in the bed, and we'll turn on one of Chris's stories and we can just lay there and cuddle and listen to the story. And it's a great way for Chris and I to relax and the boys to be engaged with something that kind of encourages their imagination. And then when it's over, they can ask us questions. It gives us a jumping off point of more conversation and things to think about. And they ask questions, and it's just a great way to spend time together, or to even just put on if you need a second to take a shower or go, you know, make some sandwiches, instead of putting the kids down in front of a screen.
Yeah. So anywhere where you have ears, which is everywhere, and electronic device, which generally is everywhere, somebody can get the stories, these audio stories.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And Chris,
that's right.
I know, as the content producer for Imagining Aloud, between the two of you, whose idea was this to create this subscription-based audio story service?
Well, I have to say the credit goes to Sarah on this one. She listened to an interview with some people who are kind of our inspiration for this, and they basically are the pioneers for creating these really high quality, really uncommercialized audio stories. And so she had heard an interview with them and came home and basically said, you know, Chris, this is what you are supposed to be doing. You should be doing this. And I was really skeptical at first. Go ahead.
Sparkle Stories, right? That's who you're talking
Sparkle
about?
Sparkle Stories. Yes. Okay. David and Elizabeth, who are actually from Austin originally. So
right.
We kind of have a regional connection there, although we don't know them personally. Not all Texans know each other.
What? Somebody yes. told me that Texas is just this tiny, tiny little state.
Everybody's really friendly.
Is that? Or maybe my U.S. geography is terrible.
We all act like we know each other, even if we don't.
Okay. All right, so Sarah comes home and she says, Chris, you were born to do this. You got to start recording children's audio stories in your closet in your spare time. Go.
I actually heard the interview when I was at home, and I knew that Chris and the boys were at a playground just down the street. And I grabbed our dog Yoshi. I put him on the leash and I ran, half walked to the playground saying, Chris, this is it. He and the boys were sliding down the slide, and he humored me and listened to me tell him the idea.
And it totally clicked. Yeah, this is something, and you know, it was something I was already doing. I was already making up stories for my kids, as a lot of dads probably do, dads and moms do. And so each week I was coming up with these crazy wild stories, and sometimes they had a lesson, and sometimes they were just, you know, just silliness and entertainment, but we, you know, they always got something out of it. And then there would be those days when I would come home after, you know, a 12-hour day and have maybe 30 or 40 minutes to spend with them before bedtime, and you know, I'm exhausted, and that day I wasn't able to come up with a story. And so it started as a way to just kind of like record what I was already doing, And then we kind of came up with the idea, you know, this is actually enhancing the time we're spending together. I wonder if this would be good for other families who are in the same situation.
Well, I guess the main difference between you and me, for example, and yes, I tell stories to the boys. Earlier tonight, we're recording this a little bit later, I was singing songs to Grant. He demands three songs before he goes to sleep. And normally he wants a Snow Leopard song and a tapir song. He knows the strangest animals. And I'll make the songs up. But the difference is, Chris, you're a professional voice actor. And you've been doing this for like two decades. So you have a little bit more experience both with the voices and with the post-production stuff, which if people listen, that's one of my favorite things. I mean, you yourself are great, but the way that you integrate all these different sound effects and the silliness is super cool. So you come up with this idea, and Sarah is just totally behind you. Well, Sarah is the one with the idea, and Chris, you're the one who is creating this. But I know you mentioned you ran out of stories one day, and you were thinking, man, it would just be so great to be able to click play and have my kids have this awesome story where they can just be engaged, and we can snuggle and have this quality time, and I don't actually have to open my mouth. We can just enjoy. But why did you actually decide to put in the months of work to make this a reality? What was at the end of the line in terms of the impact that you were hoping to make that made you say, got to do this?
You know, to kind of add to what you said at the top of the show, we just don't feel as motivated by the things that are supposed to be motivating us in this culture. Now, I don't want to make that sound like we are not like just regular people who live regular lives. We absolutely are. There are things I'd like to have. You know, there's nice things I'd like to have, just like everybody else. But I think what we've seen, especially once the kids joined our family and really made it a family 4 years ago, is that time is really the only thing that matters. Time and health. Those are the only two things. And so for us, it's been a journey finding a place where we could finally say, you know, what is it we really want? And just be honest about it with each other. What we really want, I think, is to try to bring something good into the world and help other families like us that are struggling with these exact same things. We feel really satisfied when we hear from people who tell us that the stories that we've created, or an article that we've written on our site, or a guide that we've written is actually enhancing a family's time together. That's just, there's nothing better than that. And so for us, you know, we'd really like to get to a place where we could make this our full-time, you know, commitment and passion in life. I think there's probably nothing better than that.
Yeah. Well, and we get really excited when we think even further down the line in even bigger terms of, I was a bilingual second and third grade teacher for a long time when I came back from Spain, and we would love to be able to use the stories, and actually have already in one classroom, to help second language learners to learn English. The stories are, they're very well produced and they're very easy to follow, and the language that's used, we hope, can help increase children who are trying to learn English, even adults, really anybody who wants to learn English or practice listening. And we'd also we'd like to use it with children who are blind, who can't see, who would enjoy, you know, listening to stories. We've thought about maybe even children's hospitals or various places where it's not possible to necessarily hold a book all the time, but children are laying down or in bed or need something that is fun to listen to and engaging and can lift their spirits, but not necessarily something that they have to hold or touch or be sitting up to engage with.
I just thought of one more thing. Joel, when we launched last week, and this kind of speaks to what I was referring to earlier. When we launched last week, it was amazing because a lot of the people that we know, you know, friends and family and loved ones, were very encouraging. And some people would have follow-up questions. And one of the follow-up questions was, you know, well, is this going to be produced as a video series, or are you going to follow this up with, you know, some kind of iPad app that has integrated content, you know, something that the kids can interact with? And this whole idea of having this kind of interactive screen type entertainment is a very new concept. It really hasn't been around that long. And we're starting to see some of the consequences that are related to it. Not all of them, obviously, because a lot of it's still too new. But we've even seen it with our own kids. You know, and early on, we made some choices to kind of steer away from some of the screen entertainment. We don't keep all screens out of our children's lives. But so the question we get a lot is about why audio stories? What's the point of necessarily doing audio stories when you've got this great, you know, everybody's got a screen and this wonderful video medium available on demand? Well, you know, what we've seen, especially with audio stories, is that a child's imagination can be enhanced in a way that that just watching a show doesn't provide. Our kids love to watch a couple different cartoons. Bob the Builder is one of them. And, you know, when they watch a Bob the Builder cartoon for the next 15 to 30 minutes afterwards, they play Bob the Builder and they pretend to be Bob the Builder. To some degree, it's just reenacting what they've just seen in the episode. And that's fine. There's nothing necessarily wrong with that. But we see such a difference when we read them a story, when we're able to sit down with them and read them a story, you know, and really go through it and go in depth with it and answer their questions. And we see them react so differently to those kinds of experiences, sitting down and listening to our audio stories together. The boys, they, you know, they'll still act out some of the parts, but it's much more flexible. It's, you know, for instance, Benjamin has told me things about the characters that I create that are wildly different from the way I imagine them. So in other words, he's hearing the content and in his own mind, he's taking it and just running with it. He's going in a totally different direction. And I just think that's the whole point. That should be the whole point of creating some kind of entertainment for children, is giving them a jumping off point, but then letting their imagination kind of do the rest.
Well, Chris, don't you worry. I'm pretty sure this video thing is just a passing fad. As far as I know, all people do in the 21st century is just listen to audio, whether it's podcasts
and imagining aloud
or
is children's also available
stories. On photograph. So, yeah, we don't have to worry about the written word or video. It's just that's going to die pretty soon. We're in a really good place doing audio. You mentioned something though, and I remember the very first time that we spoke, you told me, I can't remember which of the two of you it was, but you were talking about reviving vintage practices that parents have put down. Maybe not even realizing it, but this kind of goes along with my whole line of thought, which is that we, not just as parents, but as humans, have forsaken so many of the things in our culture and our history that made us fulfilled and happy, experienced deep senses of gratitude. So this is one of them. You know, the fact that interactive devices, iPads and video are new. You're right, they are really new. Do you... shifting away from imagining aloud for a second, are there other vintage practices that people have put down that you have now picked up?
Absolutely. Well, and this was another decision because we had twins, but also from living abroad, that we made early on, which was to try to keep things such as birthday parties, for example. Very simple. Since there was two kids, it could easily get very out of control. And what I did was I took my baby book that my mom kept for me for many, many years. And she wrote each year what she did for my birthday party and who was there and what the gifts were. And I decided, you know, whatever my mom did is exactly what I'm going to do. And so for 3 years till my fourth birthday, the birthday party was in the backyard and there was a cake and there were some neighborhood friends and that was it.
No theme.
And exactly. I know. Can you imagine?
No moonwalk with those inflatable things. I love those, by the way.
Those are super fun.
None of those.
Those are super fun.
They have their place.
They do. They do. I know. No theme. And, you know, at the risk of alienating some listeners, you know, no Pinterest projects. No.
Yes. No party favors.
Yeah. No party favors. No. Just not a whole lot of...
stuff.
Forethought on the part of the parents, which I think is fine because the children ended up having a great time. They would play in the backyard and eat a slice of cake and open the presents. And that was opening the presents was the entertainment and then go home. And I just decided if it was good enough for me and I turned out relatively okay. It should be good enough for our children. And, you know, Chris had the same experiences too. He had very simple birthday parties and very simple gift exchanges. So that's one area where we decided to just keep things very simple and vintage, because it's worked for a very long time, and I think it can continue to. And I really think, you know, the Pinterest in that is more for the parents. It's not for the children as much. I feel like it's a kind of a, can become a mommy competition a little bit, but I've just decided to refrain from that. And we feel really good about it. The boys always have fun, and it's been good so far. Yeah. Well, that's one example.
Here's another great thing that we have going for us. As far as I know, this whole Pinterest thing, that's also a fad. People are going to be shifting over to Excel spreadsheets for everything really soon.
You're spearheading that, Joel.
Yeah, I'm working on it a little bit. Chris, what about you, though, when it comes to vintage practices? Separate from birthdays and gifts and some of the material stuff, what about the intangible stuff, you know, mental or emotional, and the kinds of experience that you create for the boys? What are some of these antiquated, air quotes here, antiquated thoughts or experiences that you have said, you know what, no, they're just as good now as they were 50 years ago, 100 years ago?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I remember growing up and playing on a soccer team. I started playing soccer when I was 4 years old. I played soccer for a number of years. It was great. I really enjoyed it. Going to soccer practice, you know, twice a week. And things like that have their place, I think. These really regimented, structured kind of activities. But I also think what we've seen is a loss of balance. So while I was going to soccer practice 2 days a week, I was also spending, you know, 2 or 3 days a week just playing in a forest near our home with my friends and, you know, riding our bikes up and down the street for hours and hours at a time, and playing outside constantly, running around playing tag. And so I think what we've seen happen is a lot of that unstructured playtime has gone away. And I'm not exactly sure why. There's lots and lots of reasons, but definitely one of those outcomes of that is that we've now got an enormous amount of regimented, structured activities for our children to do. The average 6 or 7 year old, you know, especially in these affluent parts of the country, are, you know, taking taekwondo lessons and an art class, and they're going to some kind of mommy and me gymnastics, and right after that, they're going to some tutoring thing that they have to do. So from my point of view as a dad, I've just kind of had to say, you know, say no to a lot of that stuff. And that's not to say that there won't be the right time for those things. I just think my kids get so much out of the free time that they have. And it helps that they have a playmate. You know, they always have a playmate there. They have their best friend and their worst enemy with them at all times. Mm-hmm. What I try to do is I try to make space in the time that I spend with them to be spontaneous, to be flexible, to have a plan, but then completely scrap it if something catches our eye, or if, you know, they get a wild hair, we can absolutely turn that into an afternoon mission. I'll give you an example. Today, we were looking for an extra house key to leave out for some people that need to come by our house and check on things and make sure everything's all right. And that became a mission, going around the house looking for it. But then once we found it, the next project became, where can we hide it and how can we hide it? Mm-hmm. And I just basically let them turn what was supposed to be kind of just a 10-minute errand on the way to doing some other things into, you know, a 30 or 45-minute pretty involved activity where we were discussing pros and cons. We were talking about, what if we put a rubber band on it? We could attach it to something, but what would we attach it to? And so kind of just getting out of the way in some ways, Joel. I think there's a thing happening now where it's like nobody's quite sure what the parents should be involved in or what they shouldn't be involved in. So we'll just be involved in everything, you know? And I think it is a hard balance to strike. So I get why people err on the side of being cautious and being involved in as many things as possible and keeping it structured and keeping it regimented. But for me and for my kids, we've seen a great benefit out of kind of going in the opposite direction.
Yeah. Well, you have other good ideas on Parents Who on your blog, like put on all your t-shirts, Grant and I haven't done that yet, although it's on my Google Calendar. I keep kicking it that can down the road 1 week at a time. Yeah. Saturday at 3:30 p.m., I have it scheduled after he wakes up from his what we call quiet time, although he doesn't really nap all that much anymore, to put on all our T-shirts, which is a great idea. And I'm really looking forward to doing that one time. I'll come out with all my T-shirts and say, hey, notice anything different about me? And then he'll get silly and put on all his T-shirts. You have all these other kinds of ideas. It just seems, to the kid, it's just spontaneous. But sometimes planned spontaneity is pretty good. A couple of quick follow-up questions for you, Chris, though.
Sure.
The forest that you played near in your youth, was it called Marygrove Forest?
It wasn't. But that's a really good guess. It was called The Trails, and it's now just a housing community. I've driven past it, you know, many times. It's not far from where I live now. And it's now just a really nice suburban community. But yeah, that was a spot for us kids in the neighborhood to get away from all these parents and try out being individuals and go find a mysterious house in the woods, which there literally was one, and go you dare each other to go inside and see. You know, I mean, I just don't know where my kids would even do that today. So that's kind of one aspect of what I'd like to introduce back into the world of kiddom with Marygrove Forest, which is one of the stories in Imagining Aloud. The animals in that storyline, you know, they're very much just animals in the wild, but they deal with the kinds of issues that kids deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah. Making friends, being kind to your neighbors, telling the truth,
learning to share,
respecting other people's perspectives, those kinds of themes that seem to be universal. I mean, kids, parents too. Parents can get on board with that, and that resonates with everybody.
Okay. And, you know, it's not, I try to make it, you know, nobody wants to sit through some kind of, you know, Aesop's fable moralistic lesson. I try to keep it as entertaining as I possibly can without losing the message.
You know what else is entertaining? Here's my second question real quick, side note. So you mentioned Taekwondo is one of these many, many activities. Are either of you two familiar with the movie Napoleon Dynamite?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. If there was a Rexquando in your neighborhood, would you want your children to learn Rexquando? They practice the buddy system, and you've got your kids who they have instant buddies.
I think what you've identified here is the exception that proves the rule, Joel.
Okay. All right. So Rexquando is cool. Got it. Just wanted to make sure that we're totally clear on a number of things here tonight. Well, I'm sure we could go on and on. I almost feel like we'll save this for follow-up. Since the three of us were so into this whole Simple Rev thing, which I've talked about a number of times on the show, maybe we'll save some Simple Rev-related talk for another time. But we know each other pretty well by now, and we're being silly. And that's I'm not trying to drive home any particular message, but we're adults. But yet we can have fun and we can be silly and we can play and we can experience like deep levels of play. And I feel and I've experienced it's almost socialized out of us where there's things that kids do and there's things that adults do. And it's really hard to bridge that gap. Like you're either on one side or you're on the other. And that's one of the reasons why I like your stories is because when you say fun for the whole family, it is. I enjoy the heck out of them and Grant does too. What I'm trying to get at here, and I haven't had this segment in a long time. Humor me for just a moment.
Sure.
It's probably been like 30 episodes or so, but we haven't had a How Crazy Is Joel segment on the show for a while. And I'm going to give you an opportunity to tell whatever comes to mind. Can you explain to people who are listening how crazy I am in any particular way?
I would say that you're at the same time like, I don't know how this is possible, but you seem to be the most type A and the most type B person at the same time that I've ever met. Like you're extremely well organized and put together. And yet at the same time, you are very open to absolutely anything that comes at you, incredibly, you know, gregarious and always seems super laid back, even though inside I imagine it's just a blast furnace of anxiety sometimes.
Wow, I'm glad we're recording and I got that one.
It's a good description. That's good. I was going to say that you're so crazy that I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for here, but that you don't see anything as being impossible. I mean, you think all things are possible and they can happen. And I think that forces you and pushes you without you really thinking about it, to do things and try things that maybe other people wouldn't try, and make things, you know, like Simple Rev happen and make them a big deal and a big movement and impact a lot of people's lives, because you're just, you don't think, you know, and you don't come off, you don't seem like that failure is an option, and that pretty much anything's possible. And that, I think, makes you just crazy enough to get a lot of really cool things done. And bring people along with you on that journey, which is even cooler.
Yeah.
And you're a really approachable tall dude. Not all tall dudes are approachable. But you are very approachable.
It's the baldness and the big smile. Those two things say, hey,
that helps.
Come on over and talk to me. I would love it if you would. Well, we've covered a ton of stuff, and there's going to be some great things in the show notes. All of the resources that we've talked about, of course, links to Parents Who and Imagining Aloud. Is there anything that we didn't talk about, though, that you would like people to know?
Yeah. So we have, you know, kind of as part of our launch promotion, we want to make sure that we're rewarding those people who have been our loyal newsletter subscribers and those that have kind of been reading our blog for the last several months. And so we have a situation right now where it's basically 50% off for the first 100 people that are subscribing to Imagining Aloud. So right now it's $7 a month for what is essentially 8 totally original, commercial-free, really fun, super great stories that you're going to get every month. And along with that comes 100% money-back guarantee. We know it's not going to be right for all families out there, so if it's not right for yours, let us know. We'll make it right. But, you know, so far, we've seen a lot of response. We hope to keep seeing that coming over the next weeks and months.
Something that we haven't talked about that I always feel like I want to say when we talk about the subject of simplicity and parenting and our parenting journey is we talk a lot about the things that work for us and the things that are positive, because that's what we like to focus on. But we are by no means perfect at this, and we have our shortcomings, and we've learned a lot of things by messing up and being overwhelmed and struggling. And for example, our children are actually awake in the hallway right now as we speak doing I don't even
know
what.
Should I bring one in to say hi?
Sure. Okay. And I don't even really want to know what they're doing, quite honestly. But but we know that it's hard being a parent and trying to balance everything. And we by no means think that we have everything right. And we love to hear from other parents and other families about what's working for them. And because that only just helps all of us. You know, like our good friend Dan Hayes always says, a high tide raises all ships. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely what we're going for. So you want to say goodnight, Mr. Benjamin?
Good night.
Say hi, Mr. Joel.
Hi, Mr. Joel.
have a good snooze, Mr. B.
What are you doing instead?
I'm just saying hi.
Oh, you're just saying hi. Okay.
He's been waiting all this time. All he wanted to do was say hi. If you would have let him do it right away.
Like a beautiful tapestry of mischief.
Ah. I don't know if you caught that. He's taken every ornament off his Christmas tree and lined it all up along his bed. Like a beautiful tapestry of mischief, Chris says. Yeah. So
this just got real, and I love incorporating the realness of being a mother or father to small children into the show.
Yes.
That's great.
We're happy to help.
Well, so parentswho.com is one place where we can find you and Imagining Aloud. Where else can we find you too online?
You can find us on Twitter at Sarah Wehkamp, Wehkamp. And
you can find me at Chris Wehkamp, and you can also find me in the Funimation anime series Laughing Under the Clouds. The new episodes air every Saturday at 11:30 a.m. for subscribers to the Funimation website.
Sweet. I am going to have to figure out how I make that happen, at least for one or two episodes. Well, you two, thanks a ton for being on the show. It was a lot of fun, and I hope the listeners had a ton of fun as well, but also great tips, things that are universal that bridge ages and whether you have children or not. Just good old-fashioned wisdom coming from the two of you. I really appreciate it.
Sure thing. And Joel, we want to make sure that the listeners know that they can go to parentswho.com/SASM for some special goodies for Smart and Simple Matters listeners.
Yeah. Rock on, you two. Special goodies.
Yes.
Thank you. I will make sure that there is a prominent link in the show notes along with everything else.
Awesome.
Thanks, Joel.
Wasn't that chat fun? I had fun. I hope you had fun. From the gift of travel and the invisible gifts you get from it, to opting out of going big with birthday celebrations, to getting out of the way and letting your kids have fun the way they want to have fun, it's a treasure trove of grooviness for parents and non-parents alike. So show these two, show Chris and Sarah that you appreciate their insight on Twitter, Facebook, or on the special page that they created just for groovy, smart, and simple matters listeners like you. You can find that at parentswho.com/SASM. You can also get links to their social media profiles, their Imagining Aloud sweetness, and everything else we spoke about in the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM062. Really, I can't say enough about the fun and quality of their Imagining Aloud stories, and I hope you get in on their launch promo for a 50% discount like I did. It's only good for the first 100 subscribers, so the bargain might be gone depending on when you listen to this episode. If you want a piece of me, you can always reach me at joel@valueofsimple.com, on Twitter at Joel Zislavsky. I'm on G+ at plus Joel Zislavsky, and, you know, I kind of hang out a bunch of other places online outside of Excel forums. Yeah, I'm even outside of spreadsheet forums these days. Also, I'd be grateful. Really, I'd be truly grateful if you shared this episode and the show in general with your friends. It's new folks, and the iTunes subscriptions and or the iTunes reviews that go a long, long way to furthering our message to simplify, organize, and be money wise. Thank you a ton for your support. Now, I got to get back to my Excel forums, my Excel spreadsheets, and pretending that people don't read or watch videos anymore. It's now time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zislavsky, creator of all things Value of Simple.